Scottish Mortgage seeks out lateral thinkers like academics, authors, and experts in the industry to shape our investment ideas. Not the usual suspects and narrow mindset of financial analysts and investment industry commentators. That way, we continue to build a portfolio that reflects real-world progress, not financial world noise. Scottish Mortgage is managed by Baillie Gifford. A key information document is available by visiting bailliegifford.com. As with any investment, capital is at risk.
Hello and welcome to City Warrior Podcast. I'm Margarita Kirakosian and we are currently at the New Model Advisor Conference in London. And joining me is Julia Maroszewska, the founder of Defense and Security Center and an activist and also Ukrainian, as
absolutely.
I am.
So, hi, Margarita.
Absolutely 100% Ukrainian. Ласкаво просимо, Юлія.
Дякую. I'm really happy to be here in this event and to share the stories of Ukrainians from the front line and from the regular life.
So, Julia, I know kind of from experience, from friends and family who are still in Ukraine, that it's quite a long journey. So how long did it actually take to get to London?
It's a great question, you know. You have to be Ukrainian to ask this question.
Exactly.
Because we have like zero flights from Ukraine right now. All the operations, flight operations are suspended. So I had to take a train from Kyiv to Warsaw, which takes around 19 hours. And then I'm staying overnight in Warsaw. And then in the morning, I'm catching the flight to London. That's my regular road, a regular trip to London. Or anywhere. So mostly I'm traveling from Warsaw, and I have like actually extra 24 hours that I have to spend in a train.
So it's at least a two-day journey, which logically backs a question: why does it matter? Like, how do you kind of like, what is the purpose of spending so much time, you know, going to places and talking to people about Ukraine? Because I think you have a very interesting background. You understand the economic side of things because you were an economic advisor. Is that right?
So I was the deputy governor of the Odessa region and then head of the Odessa customs. So I worked pretty closely with the taxation and economic development of the south region, which is actually super connected to the grain exports because the south of Ukraine is considered to be the gate of Europe because of the amount of commodities that are moving there.
Moving around. So how is the situation like, well, both in Odessa and Ukraine at large, 1 year on? I personally still can't believe that we're almost at a one-year mark because in the beginning, almost no one gave us longer than a couple of days and we're still here. But in terms of economics and politics, where are we 1 year on?
Wow. When you're saying that, I also cannot believe it's a year already, like almost a year. So I would say that in this year we became much stronger. Our army became much stronger and our civil society became stronger and angrier and now more trained and more knowledgeable. Mm-hmm. You know, in my community, everyone knows the difference between F-16s, F-18s, F-15s, yep, between Abrams tanks and Leopard tanks and Challenger tanks. And I presume you too know
steep
the difference
curve, yes,
between
yes,
ground air defense S-300 mm-hmm. Patriot mm-hmm. and NASAMS. That's insane how much of a new knowledge, new skills we got. So the whole society is changing. But I would say that Ukraine and the Ukrainian people are becoming stronger in this year.
So it's not just about us per se as well, because Ukraine is a big exporter. And when I talked to people, especially in the beginning, there wasn't that much realization of how much we were producing to export abroad. And some of the things like sunflower oil, pig iron, and you mentioned that in your presentation, these are not things that were even in public domain or public awareness. So can you elaborate a little bit on that and, well, firstly, explain a bit the impact of the war in the Ukrainian economy and then as an extension of that on the world economy?
So with the Ukrainian economy, it's kind of a disaster. We lost almost a half of the Ukrainian economy. Just because a lot of people left the country, those people who worked and produced taxation and money to the budget and some value. And another part is the global perception, you know. For me, because I'm Ukrainian and because I worked with the seaport and I saw like on my table every day the amount, the volumes that are exported. For me, it's so surprising that people do not know that Ukraine is number one sunflower oil exporter, that like sunflower oil in Italy is from Ukraine, you know? Like, and globally. So for me, it's surprising, but I understand that this war showed how interconnected global economy is and showed a real place of Ukraine in this global economy. We are kind of like under-communicated economy, so I wouldn't say that we were seen as this bigger size player, but now when the, especially at the beginning of the war, when the export capacity of Ukraine was were cut off, then we saw how it influenced the world, and the amount of problems that appeared after that in terms of the prices rising for the commodities. It was like obvious that Ukraine has its huge place, especially in the global food security.
So what are the biggest pressure points at this time? Because obviously I think Egypt and Lebanon, places like that, they are quite dependent on the agricultural exports, but it's not just that. There are many more things that you don't necessarily think about that are still under pressure.
So low-income countries depend on Ukrainian sunflower oil and grain, and it's not only Ukrainian, but Russian, which is under sanctions. So they're losing even like one more exporter. These countries also are suffering from the lack of fertilizers right now that were coming from Russia, which are under sanctions right now. And then if we are speaking about more developed countries, then the problems are more developed. For example, German's automotive industry suffered problems because of the wireless harness, which were produced in the Western Ukraine. And when the war has started, when the full-scale invasion has started, the facilities in Ukraine couldn't operate, and that caused a problem in the Germans' plants. But, you know, it's possible to rebuild the supply chain in this case. But for those countries with a lower income, I don't think that would be so easy.
Very challenging.
And for the whole world, like Ukrainian farmers that are not able to plant enough grain this year, it will influence very different industries, from fish and chips that you will be buying on the streets of London, a little bit more expensive now, to, as it happened, to baby formula in the US. So a wide range of industries are harmed with this war.
And you mentioned that some of the areas in Ukraine are still, well, kind of like inaccessible for agriculture, and then military has to basically wait through like fields to work out what is safe and what is not.
Unfortunately, Ukrainian land and Ukrainian sea now are the most mined areas in the world, and it's also a huge ecological disaster. Like, you know, hundreds of thousands of dolphins are dying because of mines, because of the
explosions.
Yeah, they exploded in the sea, in the Black Sea. But if we are talking about agriculture, fields, especially in the eastern Ukraine, in the north, are mined, and they were mined by both sides, by Ukrainian and by Russian side, because now it's not an agriculture field, now it's a butterfield. And we already have lots of accidents when tractor drivers were actually killed because the tractor hits the mine,
explodes. And I was wondering as well, kind of like changing the topic slightly, So because we are talking about investments here, right? And there are two ways to approach this for those who are looking to either support Ukraine or to make sure that their investments are going to the right place. So one is to invest to contribute to Ukraine's future development. Another one is making sure that you are not contributing your money in a way that you are not aware to Russian businesses, basically, well, to the Russian economy, because it's foreign businesses who are still present in Russia. So I guess let's start with the positives. Let's start with how investors can help Ukraine at this point in time. Which sectors would make a lot of sense to support?
So even though you wouldn't think about investing into the country at war, but Ukraine is in a unique situation. During the last year, our IT industry, software development, has grown rapidly, and it is still growing. Even though it's a war, I think during this year we had 13% of growth. So if there is an interest in Ukraine and you want to make a safe investment, where for sure your numbers will be growing, I would look into the Ukrainian startups.
I have friends all over Europe and further afield who are IT professionals who are still working for Ukrainian companies.
And that's the reason. Yeah. It's easy for them to work. They can live in Portugal and still work for Ukrainian startup. So this flexibility, mobility of the people working in this IT company, it actually saved part of Ukrainian economy.
Yeah, and it's expertise as well, because, you know, we have people who are trained to do this. And this is, again, something under the radar, but something people who were from the country knew for a very long time, that IT industry is booming and it still continues to grow. What was the number that you gave for even last year?
So IT industry is the third biggest industry in Ukraine, mm-hmm. after grain and metal. Then we have like IT sector in terms of exporting. Mm-hmm. So it's billions of dollars coming into Ukraine and it is growing. And what's interesting, a few years ago, it was mostly outsourced for US, Germany and UK. So companies in UK would find companies, teams in Ukraine that will develop products for them. Now the situation is changing. Now it is products developed in Ukraine, but making money on Western markets.
Yes, yeah.
And but thanks God they're paying taxes in Ukraine, so that's very important
that
for us.
Yeah,
that helps economy a lot. So that would be number one economy sector to look at. And then for those who are interested in long term investments in heavier industries, I would say like construction, infrastructure, agriculture, I would just start looking now. Because when the war will be over, there will be a lot of interest from investors all over the world to invest in Ukrainian land, agriculture and infrastructure. But if you will start establishing connections now, establishing connections with the community, and maybe starting with a smaller impact investments, renovating something, helping to renovate something small, just to make a good name in the country, it will be really helpful for the moment when the war will be over and everyone will be here, but you will be in Ukraine. But you will be someone who is already known and already have trust among the local
community. And I was wondering, beyond construction, infrastructure investments, and, well, IT, obviously, agriculture, almost forgot about that. I think it's important for foreign companies, especially, to remove their businesses from Russia. I know it's a hard choice because obviously you're losing money on it, but there is no alternative because otherwise you are providing them with funds to continue the invasion.
Yeah, and I think staying in Russia will also bring at some point to the situation of losing money, because staying in Russia creating a lot of scandals around the brand of the company, creating a lot of tension. And if you're working with the public company where the image and perception
and
means
shareholder
a lot.
Pressure.
And
yes.
Shareholder mm-hmm. pressure means mm-hmm. a lot. It means that one day you will lose share values if you are staying in Russia. So there are this moral component, but there is also a long-term strategic mm-hmm. financial component. So that's very important to pay attention to it. And there are some tools that can help fund managers mm-hmm. and financial advisors to manage the situation, to know for sure what is the situation with the company that they're looking at investing in, for example, or partnering in. There is a Kiev School of Economics project mm-hmm. Where you can check if the company is in Russia, is operating in Russia currently, if they're pulling out of Russia, and what kind of statements they're making. So you can find this project on the website of the Kiev School of Economics, and you can also find the similar project done by the Yale School of mm-hmm. Management. They're sharing the current status on companies operating in Russia. So my message is very simple. Make it your ESG fund policy to have no Russia-connected company and money in your portfolio. Mm-hmm. And one more thing, important thing, is to not cooperate with those people, international specialists, consultants, or directors who are sitting in the boards of directors mm-hmm. of the Russian companies. There are a lot of them, and Ukrainian National Anti-Corruption Agency right. made a list, and you
That's
can find
good.
Oh, find it on your it's on your website. I shared the link with you with CityWire. So check the people that you're working with. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of them, they're still sitting in this Gazprom board of directors, mm-hmm. and that's not someone you want to have on your board of directors.
This is so fascinating, because when the invasion just started, I took the pains to look at ESG funds that held Gazprom, and there were a couple, and I just couldn't believe my eyes when I saw it. It was like, no matter how you look at it, from the environmental perspective, social governance perspective, this just makes no sense. So I just hope that this situation will be improved with yeah. time, and people just will pay a bit more attention, because it's not just about the usual suspects, for example. Like, we did hear in the news about Raiffeisen Bank having a big exposure in Russia, but there are also some very much everyday consumer companies that you wouldn't think about, and they are still there, and they are still providing money that is potentially funding the war.
Yeah, absolutely. Like this French company Bonduelle, they have a huge scandal around them. Whatever the context of the scandal was, the thing is that they're still operating in Russia, and they're calling it that their basic needs product, but first they're not, and it's obviously looks like business interest, and it's just. First of all, they already lost the Ukrainian market,
yeah.
as an example.
Yeah.
Ukrainian Ministry of Economy, I think they suspended their operations in Ukraine, and lots of chains, they just now refusing to sell them, trade chains, they don't mm-hmm. want to sell them on their shelves anymore. So that's just like small examples, but I think there must be a very clear vision, understanding, and inner policy regarding working in Russia.
Yeah. And if we think about the outlook for the coming months, I hear a lot from like people I know that the next couple of weeks and months will be tough on multiple levels, but I was wondering if you can give some insight in terms of what are we looking at kind of like going forward, and where the international community potentially should be paying attention and be there and supporting Ukraine.
So it is a time to pay attention. If after the Kharkiv summer counteroffensive and then south counteroffensive, we had some kind of positive, not break, but at least not as such an active period war period as it was before. Now it's starting over again.
Yeah.
So 300,000 people, new conscripts to Russian army are already trained. And from what I'm hearing, the new offensive is starting already some directions. We already lost Soledar, a very complicated fight around Bakhmut is happening. So, and it will be tougher and tougher. And next weeks we are waiting for a tougher offensive from the Russian side. So all the support that international governments can provide with the weaponry is the best time it is now. Yes.
Yeah. And it's just to kind of like keep that awareness of that. This is still happening. I know it's been a long time. And even for us, it's hard to kind of like keep on thinking about it again and again. But it didn't go away. It's not going away anytime soon as well.
I'm also thinking about that, you know, like media attention span is short.
It is.
But the war is long. Mm-hmm. And we are in the middle of this long war. So for us, it's an ongoing process and it's very hot there. And I understand it's hard to pay the attention, but think about people who are like sitting at the frozen cold at trenches. It's much harder for them. So let's just stay united here. And I can't say that people are like forgot about that. They're forgetting about Ukrainian war, the war in Ukraine. I see a lot of support. I feel it among international communities. It's just that like media is shifting to something else.
Yeah, it's just the news cycle, unfortunately. Yeah. What I also wanted to talk to you about a little bit is that, the front line is front and center of what we are talking about a lot. But it goes beyond that. There are a lot of communities behind the front line where you don't have electricity for hours on end, for example. So if you could share a little bit of insight, because I know that from my family that it can be blackouts day in, day out, just to give a feel that this is real.
It is very real. I call it a new normal for us, for Ukrainians. For example, in Odessa last week, it was like 2 days without light. And what does it mean 2 days without electricity? It's not that you just cannot like switch on your computer or cook your food. It also means that you don't have internet access. And it's just a disaster. It's very depressing, especially when the weather is bad and then your heating doesn't work or sometimes your water supply doesn't work. So it's kind of like a weird and tough life experience. But living in Kyiv, we have more or less stable electricity shutdowns. It happens one or two times per day for four hours every time. And I can say that somehow people are getting used to it. And even myself, now I'm like building my schedule around this electricity
blackouts.
And the rather is jokes that blackouts is the best time manager coach in the world, that now Ukrainians became super efficient, because when you have this like 2 hours of electricity, you need to do everything. You have to wash your clothes, you have to do your dishes, you have to respond to all the emails and to do everything. So jokes are jokes, but blackouts are tough. But also, let's not forget that cities which are not on the front line are being targeted almost every day with the Russian rockets and missiles.
Electricity supplies as well.
Power plants, absolutely, with the Iranian UAVs, Shaheds. They're being targeted with this UAVs. So there are, like, unfortunately, our people live like almost every day expecting something bad will happen. Yeah. And for a lot of families, it has already happened. Like, imagine that in my community, lots of families, they have sons, fathers, daughters who are fighting at the front line. Someone lost this
their loved ones.
Their loved ones. So someone is wounded. So it's kind of like it's war. It is in every part of our life. Yeah. And someone is suffering directly, but someone is suffering less. But
we are also suffering as a community together.
But everyone is in this.
Isn't it?
Yes, is a part of this process.
One thing that came strongly through your presentation is that the spirit is strong, and Ukrainian people are resilient, and we just need to be remembered. We need to be supported. So I guess last thing I wanted to ask you is, what would be your message for our European listeners, our UK listeners, knowing what you know and going through all of that in the last year?
So my message would be simple. I know that there are a lot of politics happening in every country,
yes,
around every issue. I just ask the issue of Ukraine would not be politicized, mm-hmm, and I would just ask to stand with us and to be united in this fight against terror, because Ukrainians have made their choice. We made, mm-hmm, our choice to stand strong against
it's
Russia.
It's an existential threat.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. You know, sometimes I think it's our historical mission. Mm-hmm. And I feel that a lot of people around me and in Ukraine are on a mission.
Yeah.
So we are there to defeat, to mm-hmm, win this war, to fight with Russia, and just keep supporting us as much as you can, because mm-hmm, I think all the world will benefit when such a terror regime will fall.
Mm-hmm. Yulia, thank you so much, and all the best.
Thank you so much. It was a great pleasure to meet fellow Ukrainian here at City War Event.
Scottish Mortgage seeks out lateral thinkers like academics, authors, and experts in the industry to shape our investment ideas. Not the usual suspects and narrow mindset of financial analysts and investment industry commentators. That way, we continue to build a portfolio that reflects real-world progress, not financial world noise. Scottish Mortgage is managed by Bailey Gifford. A key information document is available by visiting baileygifford.com. As with any investment, capital is at risk.